Welcome to the Aesthetic Doctor Podcast. We don't shy away and keep secrets here. We empower you with education, telling you the truth about all things aesthetic medicine, while encouraging you to be the best version of yourself. It's time to look great and feel good doing it. This is your host, mom, speaker, and board-certified physician, Dr. Judith Forger.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 58 of the Aesthetic Doctor Podcast. Today, I have the extreme pleasure of having licensed clinical mental health counselor Amber Kennedy with me. Amber is a licensed clinical mental health counselor with over 13 years of experience. In her clinical work, she specializes in mood disorders, military culture and adjustments, trauma, affair recovery, and relationship distress. She is certified in multiple types of therapies used to help people overcome irrational, dysfunctional, and unhealthy thought processes that tend to add and prolong emotional strain. She is also trained in multiple therapies, helping people process trauma that we're going to talk about. She is the owner of Spring Lake Counseling, which provides services in Spring Lake, North Carolina, and Fayetteville, North Carolina. So I am so excited to have Amber here. And today we're going to talk about trauma, how we can process it, and where it's stored in the body. This is a really important and fascinating conversation. Now, before we start, let me start with a trigger warning. Now, we are talking about trauma, even though no traumatic or distressing events are talked about in detail. So if that is something that triggers you in itself, maybe skip the episode. And please always make sure that you keep yourself safe and that you have all the emotional resources that you have. Second disclosure, we are both licensed professionals, but the conversation we're having today is for informational purposes only. So unless we are your treating physicians or clinical counselor, this is really for informational purposes only. All right. So please join me in welcoming Miss Amber Kennedy. Welcome, Amber. I'm so glad that you're joining me today.
Thank you, Dr. Borger. I'm so excited to be here today with you.
Well, you're obviously an expert on trauma. And I think trauma is something that's really something that people are starting to be more and more cognizant about it and starting really from the basics. So we all have a sort of common place to start from. What is really sort of the definition of trauma as far as it pertains to mental health and counseling?
Trauma is something that affects everybody differently. Something meaning a traumatic stress, a traumatic memory that causes stress on the brain and the way that the brain processes that stress compared to a normal memory. So trauma for one person may be a lot different from trauma from another person. And so I think the definition of trauma is very wide and it's very person dependent, but it's a significant event that causes the distress on the brain and the way in which the brain is actually processing the trauma.
I really love that we're already starting that out, because one of the things I really like to say is that there's really no comparison in suffering, right? Yeah. And that trauma is really trauma. And there's no, of course, some people unfortunately experience horrific things, and there are things that affect you that are trauma that, again, there's not a scale where people, I think, sometimes tend to minimize either what has happened to them or maximize or, well, this wasn't so bad compared to XYZ. It's like, I wasn't held at gunpoint, yet what has happened to all of us can still have effects of trauma. Like, there's no comparison in suffering.
Yes. And I hear that often in my office. An individual will come in and say, I've had this event happen. I know it's not the worst thing that other individuals are experiencing out there. And it's very important to say, it doesn't matter if it's the worst thing that the world is experiencing. It's what's happened to you that it has caused the worst in you to kind of show through the way that Brian has processed it. So absolutely, it doesn't matter what the event is. It's how the person is impacted by the event.
I love that. So yeah, I'm just going to repeat that because I think it's so important. It does not matter what the event is. What is important is how you as the person affected by the event. And there's also things like primary trauma, secondary trauma, and especially a lot of us listeners or around there, we are in caretaker positions, we're in healer positions. So would you just quickly go into like primary also versus secondary trauma?
Yeah. So when you think about primary trauma, is something that you personally have come into contact with. So for example, being in a car accident, being the individual driving the car, and being impacted significantly firsthand by that trauma, or a soldier going out into combat, right, and experiencing an IED or unfortunately losing a battle buddy. Secondary trauma would be the burnout or the compassion fatigue by taking care of a dying loved one, and how that is secondarily impacting you through the other person's loss or the other person's experience. And the way the brain processes it is extremely similar to primary and secondary, and the hippocampus, and really moves it to the amygdala where everything unhealthy is stored. So that would be the significant difference between the primary and secondary traumas.
Yeah, thank you for explaining that. Especially, as I said, other people that caretake, it's like we hear those stories, right? And if the story of somebody else makes an impact on you, that is secondary trauma. And I'm sure in the mental health fields, as well as in the healthcare fields, firefighters, counselors, really anybody, that is really the trauma we take on is not ours only by witnessing some of these things, but it gets sometimes added by the stories we hear, by the people we take care of and their traumas. And I think especially in healthcare workers or mental health workers, firefighters, all sorts of professions, like it is really an added effect too of the primary trauma and the secondary trauma through the people that you come in contact with and try to help.
Yes, yes. What I have really found in my practice in the very beginning, those traumas would really stick to me, leaving and bringing it home and really trying to figure out how I'm going to cope and process the really tough stories in office. And I think there's so much truth that if we as the caretakers, the mental health counselors, the firefighters, the police officers, the teachers even, if you don't take care of what you see in front of you or what you hear in front of you, it becomes compounded trauma, compounded secondary trauma.
Yes, that's workers, social workers, really so many people. So you have brought a little bit up about the brain. So let's talk about, and I'm going to give you the floor because you're an expert here. How is trauma really stored in our bodies? How does it stick? How does it stay?
Sure. So when you think about a normal memory that an individual has, you think about it being stored in the frontal cortex where everything healthy is stored. When you think about a traumatic stress or traumatic memory, the amygdala really takes over because the trauma is stored in the amygdala part of our brain. That's why there's triggers that the smells that you may smell could lead you to a thought, or a touch on your body may lead you to a memory. And so when an individual is impacted by a trauma, the brain cannot timestamp or date stamp that trauma and move it to the frontal cortex. It really sticks in the amygdala portion of the brain in that fight or flight mode. And so when you think kind of like a bookshelf, you are going and looking at a bookshelf and all the books are beautifully stacked together. And then you have a couple of books that may be out of order. And that is when you think about a trauma, how the amygdala is storing the traumatic memory, is that the fight or flight is out of order. It cannot move to the frontal cortex where everything healthy is stored.
Yeah, I completely love that explanation. And if you guys all want to now Google amygdala, don't do it while you're driving. Okay. But basically the amygdala is sort of the small, they always describe it as an almond. Like how did the almond and the amygdala get connected? But either way, they always describe it as like an almond shaped structure inside of the brain. And sometimes you will hear that it's part of something called the limbic system. So when you read about the limbic system, and again, you are the complete expert, but as far as I understand it, really the amygdala and the limbic system are really the parts of your brain, just like you said, that detect danger. So they're sort of the ones that keep you safe in prehistoric times from being mauled. It's the fight or flight, and it's sort of the danger receptor. So it makes complete sense that if those memories are stored in the same part of the brain that detects danger, that helps sort of protect your survival, that triggers that trigger that give you that fight or flight reaction versus, like you said, the frontal cortex. It's where a lot of our logical decision making, our personality, that kind of stuff gets triggered, that the responses are so, so different.
Yes, yes. It's very fascinating how the brain, I tell a lot of my folks, our brain was made to process and handle the good and the bad and the ugly of what life brings to individuals. And so what our brain is not meant to do is to experience such a traumatic memory, a traumatic stress, and not process it, because then it just continues to stay in the amygdala and we're always in a fight or flight mode, and the triggers just become compounding. And so the processing part of the trauma recovery is the most critical, so that we can move those memories to the frontal cortex where everything healthy is stored, because our brain is designed to do such.
So basically what you're saying, and I'm just going to sort of say it a different way, is that one of the problems with memories being in the amygdala is really that they're not supposed to be there. And that processing means really moving them out of there into the place where memories are supposed to go. Is that what you're telling us?
That is, yes. Yes.
I love it. I love it. Look, we all learned something new today. Like, I did not know that you could actually move them and process them. Before we go to some of the ways we can do that, and I really want you as a like clinical counselor to kind of talk about what are some of the effects that people have, because I think there's so much trauma, I think, that we all live with, unfortunately. And I think some people, like, the first step is really to be like, wow, this is a PTSD-like response. This is a triggered response. This is a traumatic response, because I think that's how we could really maybe help some people that are like, oh, wow, I did not realize that, again, because I was never in a car that was blown up, that this could be a traumatic memory that if I processed it, it could help me respond better or feel safer. What are some of the ways that we know that there's maybe some unprocessed trauma? Like, what are some of the reactions, some of the sort of clinical effects of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think you said some of them is you could be walking into a store, a grocery store or the mall, and you may smell a certain scent, and that certain scent may take you back to a distressful memory or thought. And you notice maybe your heart or just your heart is racing, your stomach just starts to get upset during that particular moment. Or you may be experiencing an intimate moment with your spouse or partner, and in that moment, your body starts to freeze up and you go into panic. Your heart starts to race, your thoughts, you kind of disassociate and your thoughts go off to another place. I mean, our bodies are always talking to us. Our brains are always having conversations on the daily with the world around us, and our body responds to certain smells, tastes, touches. And so if we're aware of how our body is responding, then that creates the awareness of, okay, is this a trigger? Is this just stressful? Or is the awareness creating happiness?
Yeah. And from personal experience, one of the ways I noticed personally that I had to really process some unresolved kind of bad case memory was really the fact that I was having intrusive thoughts and flashbacks. Like, I'd be on a walk and instead of enjoying the walk and all of that, all I could see was sort of like, again, trigger warning, like the dead baby that I had coded. And that was for me just being like, oh, these are the intrusions. And I assume that's probably one of the symptoms too, right? Is that more than you want, you get these intrusive thoughts, memories of an event that has passed.
Yeah. So the flashbacks, right? And I mean, you really kind of hit the nail on the head is when we are walking or even horseback riding, it creates bilateral stimulation of the left and the right brain hemispheres. And so as you're on a walk, our brains start to process things a little bit more healthier, or brings things more to the frontal cortex. And we do have those flashbacks. We do have those intrusive thoughts where you're just wanting to go on a walk, a peaceful walk. And all of a sudden you're like, where did this come from? It's because that bilateral stimulation is happening in the brain as you're taking that walk, and those intrusive thoughts begin to move in the brain.
Yeah, well, thank you. So let's talk about treatment options. And that's really where somebody like you comes in. Would you go over us like some of the either categories or really research treatments that are available for people with unprocessed trauma?
Sure. So there's quite a few out there. There's eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, also known as EMDR. That creates a lot of bilateral stimulation in the brain for trauma processing. There's also accelerated resolution therapy and or ART that folks could use to come in and get trauma recovering and processing. And that uses a lot of eye movement, back and forth, left and right eye movement. And then there's also a very effective one that I do mainly in my practice, reconsolidation traumatic memories, or RTM. It is 98% effective of resolving trauma in 3 sessions. Wow. And that to me, because I have training in the 2 that I had discussed, but what I have found is RTM has been the most effective in my office with treating trauma in 3 sessions through that re-imaging of the events and really disassociating or disconnecting that trauma from the fear, terror, and helplessness that trauma creates for the brain. So I'm a huge advocate for reconsolidation traumatic memories, or RTM. Every session that I have done RTM in, it's probably been over 100 sessions. There's been success in every session. And what I have found is that once the clients leave the office, they don't leave flooded with those distressful emotions that some trauma protocols that are effective as well, but also create those flood of emotions after session. So RTM does a lot of great reconsolidation of that memory before the client leaves the office.
Will you just do me a favor and just in the simplest of terms, explain sort of what people are going to expect? Because I think there's probably another, like you said, those emotions. It's so scary that let's say somebody is like out there listening, saying, oh, wow, I did not know that this thing that I keep having or that I keep dreaming about or that I keep being scared of, I can actually reprocess, but just the thought of going there seems so scary that it is another barrier for me to be like, I don't know whether I can handle this. I don't know if I want to do this because just thinking about it feels so bad. So would you just in the simplest terms describe like if somebody is brave enough to say, oh, wow, I think I am ready to maybe deal with this. Like what can they expect if they come for RTM?
Yes. So it is a guided script the entire time. It's a 65 prompt guided script led by me the entire time. At no time during the process does that individual face the full impact of the trauma as they did the very first time when they experienced it. So they come, they sit on my couch, they follow the scripts that I give them. We disassociate the memory and then we reassociate the memory. And they just follow the prompts that I give them. It really is a clinician-led script. And so the client just has to trust the process and just follow the protocol and the scripts that I'm asking them to do in the session.
I love that. And thank you for explaining that. And I think that's the other thing. And that's why I love having that this conversation with you, because I really want everybody to process their trauma. And to be honest, like you talking to me, I'm like, listen, there's some stuff that I'll come on your couch. Yeah. Like again, obviously. And I think because trauma has such an impact. And I think the other thing is, the way I think about trauma is also that it's sort of like an onion with a lot of layers, right?
Yes.
And like we had talked about, there's no comparison suffering. Maybe the first thing you want to talk about, because I'm a healthcare provider and I've had some horrific things, that thing that everybody understands, oh, you're pediatric ER, yes, you've seen a lot of death and suffering. I want to take care of that. But then if there's an underneath layer, again, there's no judgment, right? To sort of say, oh, and once in a while, you can't see a yellow labia because when that childhood one died, like your life at that point you thought was going to end. Like it's okay. Whatever it is, there's no too silly, too big, too small. Like,
let's
all process all of it and leave our amygdalas to really keeping us safe versus like pretend keeping us safe.
Yes, yes, yes. And you just spoke about something that's super important, especially with RTM, is what we have found is that when an individual is coming with a specific trauma that they think has been the worst trauma in their lives, RTM always takes them back to the very original trauma. So it's what's called a scene match. And so we say, come with the first trauma you've ever experienced or come with the worst trauma. Usually our worst trauma isn't the first trauma if we have compounded trauma. And it's so important to make sure we get to the foundational traumas so that everything afterwards can be resolved, right? And the amygdala can feel a little bit more free.
Yeah, that's amazing. So obviously we will, I will ask you in a little bit where you practice for anybody who's local, but we have listeners in 49, or last time I looked, like almost 50 countries. So of course you're here. Do you also do telesessions or is it all in person?
I do both telehealth and in person.
Okay. So first of all, that's wonderful, right? So you can really access it all through the United States. But if somebody wants to go somebody in person in their city, how do they find a good, reliable, well-trained kind of trauma therapist? Because I think, again, when somebody handles something so delicate, and so important, like I really want to make sure that they find somebody with which they get good therapy and good resolution.
Yeah. Yeah. Great question. So the ART and the EMDR and the RTM websites have specific practitioners listed on their websites to be able to provide those specific protocols for the trauma recovery. And so I would say it's important to, as a client, it would be important for you to research, okay, the most effective trauma modalities out there. Once you find the name of those most effective, then go on their websites to make sure that the practitioner is listed on those websites as someone who can provide that treatment modality for them.
Yeah. And so tell me about what you're doing, where you are, all the range of services you offer, and how people can find you if they want to work with you or somebody on your team specifically.
So I'm located at Spring Lake Counseling. It is my company. We are located in Spring Lake, North Carolina and Fayetteville, North Carolina. We have 25 providers on staff. We are a full service outpatient mental health facility. We serve about 1,000 clients a month and we're growing. It's been such a blessing. But I can be found at one or two of those locations, working full-time there. And really my passion is trauma and marriage and family. I see a lot of individuals for trauma recovery and I see a lot of military couples for marriage and family therapy.
And of course, we will put everything in the show notes. So if you, again, please don't take out your pen and paper while you're driving to put out your notes. You can go to the show notes. It'll all be linked. Our website will be linked. Our Instagram will be linked. All of the things will be linked so you can easily find Amber. But I think that is a really important thing that you kind of brought up, because really trauma affects every aspect of our lives, right? It affects how we can show up with our spouses. It affects how we can show up with our kids, maybe even at work. And you and I are both located in Fayetteville. And of course, being the biggest military installation in the world, unfortunately, the military, due to the nature of their work, have a huge amount of sort of occupational trauma exposure.
One thing that we do at the counseling center, me and a few other clinicians, and we're so passionate about RTM. There's a few of my providers who are also trained in RTM alongside myself. And so because we do work with a lot of the service members and their families, we want to make sure everyone has access to care. And sometimes it's really hard for the active duty service members to be able to have that access to care and go off post and get some of the treatment that would be pretty effective for them, especially in their traumas. And so we really work hard at offering free sessions for a lot of our service members and their families who have experienced trauma, specifically related to deployments, last minute notification deployments that happen quite often. And so I want to make sure that is being said, because it's important for my ministry and for the ministry of Spring Lake Counseling to let our service members and families know that there is help out there and we will do what we can do to make sure that we provide the best care possible for trauma recovery in the community that we live in.
I love that. Thank you so much for doing that. Two more questions. So number one, does insurance cover these kind of services?
Yeah. So insurance does cover the services. Thankfully, we take Humana, TRICARE, Cigna, Aetna, all the big insurance companies we are able to provide services for. And then case-by-case basis, all of our providers are great providers and we are doing it for the right reasons. And so if there is a case where an individual may not have insurance, we work really hard at trying to figure out how to get the individual in service treatment so that we can help them.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you for what you do in the world. And what are some of the kind of parting thoughts that you want to leave everybody with? Or if there's like one big takeaway or message you have for all of our listeners, sort of the floor is yours.
And that's a great question. I think just allowing yourself to be vulnerable, allow yourself to be okay to be uncomfortable. It's hard to be vulnerable and it's hard to be uncomfortable. But what I have found just in my own personal journey in life and seeing it on the couch is that through a vulnerability and uncomfortability, a lot of great work happens and you really start to learn a lot about yourself. So if a person is willing to be uncomfortable and willing to be vulnerable in the right space with the right people, there's a lot to be done and a lot to be said about that.
Gosh, that is amazing. Again, Amber, thank you for being here. Thank you for all you do in the world. Like, you literally are just have the brightest energy and you shine the brightest light. So thank you so much for all the lovely work.
Thank you so much, Dr. Barger. I appreciate you so much.
Well, we're going to link everything about Amber in the show notes. And again, thank you so much for listening. And I also kind of want to say, like, more than ever, if this is an episode that resonated with you, please share it with your friends, share it with those that might be interested, even if they don't care about the rest of my aesthetic medicine podcast, because I think this is an important message. And then again, I guess the very last thing is sort of like with any recovery, it's the individual themselves that has to be ready to do the work, right? Unfortunately, it doesn't work if I say, and not that I would say this, but if I say, oh, my husband has unresolved trauma, he needs to go to your couch. It's okay. Something that has to be motivated. The person has to be ready. And again, we are all responsible for our own processing and our own mental health. Of course, if you think somebody's unsafe, suicide hotlines, we're totally here to help you. But to do this reprocessing work, it is really something that I, as the individual, sort of as a grown-up, has the responsibility to look out for my mental health and do my processing beyond, of course, being unsafe and all of those things.
Yes.
Yes, right? We cannot make other people do this work.
No.
And we can't do it for them either.
We can't. And we have to be okay with that. And that's a hard thing to learn and to see in front of you. Yeah.
All right, people. Well, thank you again. And I will see you next time.
Thank you so much. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Aesthetic Doctor Podcast with Dr. Judith Borger. We'd love to connect with you outside of the show. Follow Dr. Borger on Instagram at Dr. Borger and find more online and ways to work with Dr. Borger at www.theaestheticdoctor.com. Until next time, be well.